driver, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Tune in to Talking Earth, a show dedicated to showcasing our local poetry scene. Join hosts Patrick Picard, Barbara LaMorticella, and Walt Curtis for Talking Earth on the second and third Mondays of each month from 10 to 11 p.m. More information can be found on kboo.fm under schedule.
KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery for their Community Tap program. Every month, Hopworks features a local nonprofit organization, and May's Community Tap is your community radio, KBOO. Hopworks is located at 2944 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. For more information on Hopworks and their Community Tap program, you can go to kboo.fm/hub.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Tonight, my guest is Emily Breaux, the chaplain of Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. She's sitting here with me right now, and I'll just ask her to briefly introduce herself and tell us how long she's been the chaplain there. She's a chaplain at the medium side.
Yes, yes. There's a medium, maximum, and minimum facility. It's the only prison for women in the state of Oregon right now. And I've been in the medium, maximum side for, I think it's like 10 years, 8 months, and 17 days. Oh. And before that, I was with the Minnesota Department of Corrections for 3 years. And when I was with them, I worked in a juvenile boys facility and a women's facility.
Okay. And how did you personally become interested in doing the work of being a chaplain and also being in prison? I'm not sure if chaplains only in prisons.
Most chaplains work in hospital situations, okay. Hospital settings, hospice settings, military. There are military chaplains. I did not really set out. I thought I was going to be a college professor. That was my track. I was in a PhD program for religion, culture, and personality, and I was a little burnt out and disillusioned, and I went to my advisor and I said, I got to find something more useful to do with my life. This isn't working out. And he said, well, before you drop out, I want you to meet a friend of mine. He does vocational counseling and helps people figure out what they're supposed to do with their lives. And I was, you know, I was in my 20s, and so I went and I met him. His name was Dan Ryan. And he also happened to be a prison chaplain. Mm-hmm. And so it sounded interesting to me. I went with him a couple times to visit, and it turned into an internship, and this little light bulb went off in my head, and I enjoyed the conversations I got to have. I felt really honored to be able to share in the stories of these people's lives and to listen to them and to, I don't know, just kind of be a part of their journey. And it just woke me up. And so I finished my schooling and did what I needed to do to become a chaplain. And then it just kind of worked out from there.
Wow. And as a chaplain, what is your role at the facility, at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility?
So I coordinate the volunteers that come in and provide services to the women. We have Christian services, Catholic services, pagan, Jewish, Muslim, Native American, Seventh-day Adventist, Latter-day Saints. I mean, all these different traditions that come in and do weekly services generally for the women. So I coordinate those, work with the volunteers, schedule the rooms and all that. So that's kind of, I try to only do that about half the time. And the other half the time, I really try to spend the time with women. I do a lot of one-on-ones, a lot of grief counseling. When an inmate gets bad news about something that happens in their family, I'm often the one who breaks the news to them and helps facilitate calls between people. Sometimes an officer will call me and say, so-and-so is breaking down. Do you have time to see her? And so she'll come down to my office and kind of melt down a little bit. And I try to help her put herself back together so she can go back out and keep doing her thing. And I try to balance my time that way.
Hmm. It's interesting, especially that the role of the chaplain, are you in some ways a spiritual or religious advisor? Is that not really part of your relationship with the women?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a religious presence in the facility. I work as a spiritual director. I don't work to, it's not my job to convert people to any particular religion. It's my job to help them figure out what their spirituality is, what their religious tradition is, and then help them be the best Buddhist that they can be, or be the best Christian that they can be, or be the best Jewish person that they can be. It's not my job to impose my beliefs onto them, but it's my job to help them integrate their beliefs into their lives in a way that will, you know, really impact them and give them hope and give them love and help them nurture a sense of self-worth and accountability and an ability to build relationships again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're a Unitarian Universalist minister.
Yes.
And could you just say a little bit about what Unitarian Universalist is? Is that you have a knowledge of all practices, or is it a little more Christian?
Unitarian Universalism comes out of the Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. That's our history. Yeah. But we tend to be a denomination that is very aware and open to the wisdom that comes from a lot of different traditions. We tend to believe that the sacred and the holy can speak to us in a lot of different voices, and it's our job to be open to those voices in order to grow ourselves and nurture ourselves.
Yeah, and that would make it really easy for you to help people of lots of different
ways.
Yes. So that's really cool. Thanks for explaining that.
No problem.
And what is the life like for women who are at Coffee Creek?
It's, you know, that's a hard question. I've never lived there, obviously, but the impression I get is that it's a pretty lonely. It can be a pretty lonely place to be, especially when you first get there. You're separated from your family. You're separated from your kids. You have to live with these people that you don't know, these complete strangers, some of whom are, you know, still playing games and being, you know, being whatever they're being, and some of which are, you know, on the right path and trying to make it, and you have to figure out where you fit. And but I also see once the women are there for a while, they kind of get into their rhythm, they get used to the place, especially if they're working or going to school, and they have things to do to fill their time and to focus on. Then it gets a little bit easier, but I don't know. That's such a general question.
Yeah.
What's it like?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a big difference between the medium side and the minimum side in terms of like the programming or like what women are allowed to do?
The minimum side is if you have 4 years or less, you generally will go to minimum. Mm-hmm. And when you're in minimum, they really focus on transitions, on getting you prepared to get out, whether it's through a drug and alcohol class that you go through, or different cognitive classes that you might take, or planning your release plan and working mm-hmm. with your PO and all that kind of stuff. If you're doing 4 years or more, you stay in the medium side of the facility. You might also stay in the medium side of the facility if your behavior doesn't warrant you going to minimum. If you know you keep getting in fights, or you keep getting caught with Pruno in your room, or you know, whatever, you keep messing up, then you'll stay in the medium side as well.
Okay. There was a question that came in from somebody who was wondering about if there was an event in your life, which I think you had mentioned, it was meeting this gentleman that made you become a compassionate person, made you feel like you wanted to be involved with the prison issue. And to add on that, my personal question would be, do you feel that there's some sort of a moral imperative for people who are religious or spiritual to be involved with reaching out to people who are incarcerated?
I think that there is a moral and spiritual imperative to be, I don't know how to articulate it, to be in touch with or in relationship with people on the margins of our society. Whether that's people in prison, whether that's people who are homeless, whether that's people who, minorities who have different experiences in this country than white folk do. Because they bring a certain experience of truth and wisdom into our communities that we really miss out on mm-hmm. when we become isolated, ivory tower, little cocoons of whatever it is you'd call that. I've always, I guess, I don't know if there's any one experience that's led me in this path, but I've certainly, in my own life, I've experienced being on the margins in different ways, and I've experienced the relationships that have helped me to not give up and to continue to fight and to continue to claim my story or to claim my life as mm-hmm. being worthwhile and valuable, even though it might not fit into this paradigm of how life is supposed to be. And so I suppose in that way, I'm drawn into working with people who are, on the outskirts of things. And I just want to be useful. I just hope to be useful. It's very humbling being a chaplain in prison, in the sense that, you know, the women that I work with don't really get to choose whether or not they work with me. I mean, they're kind of stuck with me, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it's not like they get to pick, there are three chaplains there, but between the three of us, I mean, that's it. That's, you're stuck with us, you know? Mm-hmm. It's very humbling, and I am always asking myself, how can I be useful here, and what does that really mean to be useful? So,
and what's your personal belief around incarceration and that as a practice that our society does? Do you believe in?
I think that there are some people that need to be incarcerated for the safety of community and perhaps themselves. I think the way we do incarceration these days is really out of whack. I think we need to take a real look on what the purpose of incarceration is, because if incarceration is to keep dangerous people off the streets, then why do we have so many people in prison who aren't a danger to us? As a community, as individuals who haven't been a danger for years, who have, our sentencing, our sentences are so long for people that it doesn't take, 20 years to figure your shit out so that you can, we have we have people that could be served in the community in much better, healthier ways than keeping them in prison. So I think it's overused. I think, but again, there is a certain segment of our population that does need to be there. I don't think that we would ever, I don't think prison is something that will ever go away or should go away. But how we use it needs to be really reconsidered.
We had a question from a woman named Christine, and she was wondering what areas of treatment you feel are lacking and what would you change in the prison if you had control over everything?
I think what would I change and what is lacking? I think that we could do more in the women's prison especially, and probably in the men's too, in dealing with the histories of trauma, that women who end up in prison tend to have some pretty high levels of trauma in their life. And if we don't deal with that trauma continues to drive their behavior and drive their decisions that they make and drive the relationships that they get into. And I think also work around relationships, what healthy relationships look like, what healthy relationships feel like. I think teaching women about boundaries and appropriate self-care and issues like that would be very helpful. And there's some of that going on, but not a lot, not enough, I don't think.
And she was also wondering how you felt about if you've met the new superintendent of Coffee Creek, and if he has a vision for the only women's prison, and if he's outlined a program to pay, a plan to pay for programs, or he's planning to cut them, or if you know anything about his plans for programming.
I have met him. He's a great guy. He's very good at what he does. And I have certainly not sat down with him and asked him what his vision and plan is for the facility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times I'll leave it there.
Okay. Is it not the person you work with very often, the superintendent?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And if you, from David, where would you start reform in the criminal justice system of the United States?
I think sentencing reform is the first place that we need to start. I think looking at how long we incarcerate people and why we incarcerate people. I think building better community models for care and for dealing with people who have broken the relationships in society. And I think we can intervene a lot earlier in people's lives to help them avoid ending up on this path. But that's a larger issue, well beyond the scope of the criminal justice world. Mandatory minimums, they get used and abused in ways that they no longer fulfill the intent with which they originally were mandated. I think drug laws, how we deal with legal drugs in this country, could use a real overhaul. I think, personally, I think that drugs is a public health issue, not a criminal justice issue, but we do not treat it that way. And I think if we were to treat drug use as a public health issue, we would actually be more effective in keeping people off of drugs than incarceration does.
I definitely agree that, like, in Oregon, we've got Measure 11, which has really long mandatory minimums, which you think of Oregon as a pretty progressive state, but our sentencing really could use some mm-hmm. change. And I'm not sure quite how to do that, and I'm sure you don't have the exact answer either, but yeah.
Well, it's interesting because it's not an issue that our politicians are willing to look at because of the general public's culture of fear and, you know, we need to be tough on crime. We need to be tough on these people. And so the politicians, if they decide that we need to do some reform, then they're not going to get voted in again. And then, you know, blah, 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 and yada, yada, yada. So I don't know how, you know, it needs to be a grassroots effort, I guess, to repeal our mandatory minimums and to give some more, give the judges back their discretion to apply treatments that might actually work better for certain people. You know, we end up with first-time offenders who are doing more time than fourth-time offenders because the fourth-time offenders know how to work the system and how to plea down and how to trade information for lesser charges. And our first-time offenders, they don't know anything. And so they end up getting, you know, railroaded into this system that then affects them years and years down the line because it's harder to get a job once you've been incarcerated. It's harder to find housing. I mean, it's there. Yeah, it's just that's how it is.
Yeah. And David had also wondered, you mentioned a bit about treating the issue of substance abuse as a public health issue instead mm-hmm. of as a criminal justice issue. His question was around what we can do to prevent people from going to prisons. He's saying that there's no way for us to stop the government from building more prisons. It's like, it seems pretty much at this point, I mean, there's a little bit of consensus now on both sides that criminal justice reform is a thing that people care about, but it seems to him that that's not going to happen anytime soon. They're going to keep building them. But what can we do to reach people before they become, they have to be incarcerated before they commit crimes? So there are other things that you would...
I think we need to be investing more in our Head Start programs and our education programs. When we start spending more money on our prison systems than we do on our public educational systems, then that's indicative of things being out of whack. I think we can support we have systems in place. We have social workers, county social workers in place to help families out who are struggling with issues, but their caseloads are so heavy and the resources that they have are so few that it's difficult for them even to intervene at times. And I think the American notion of, you know, people pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps and making their way in the world, and, you know, that's a bankrupt mythology that needs to break down. And we need to become more aware of the ways in which we are connected and the ways in which we are a community. And if we're not taking care of people in our community, then we are going to continue to distance ourselves, and we are going to continue to dehumanize people to the point where they belong over here and they belong, you know, these are our sisters and our brothers. You know, these are our moms and our dads who are going to prison, who are dealing with addictions, who are, you know, these are people who are connected. And the more we continue to disconnect, the harder it is to restore that connection.
Mm. Wow. Well, along the line of it being mothers and women who are in prison, and that's a big issue for women who are incarcerated because there's the issue of they're leaving many times children behind, and they may be the care providers for their children, and that places a big burden on the kids. And so you had mentioned that there's some movement in Oregon mimicking what happened in Washington, where now they're trying to be sentencing women to community-based serving their sentences in the community so that they're not being incarcerated. It's for low-level, nonviolent crimes. Mm-hmm. So I know that you had wanted to make sure that we brought that into the conversation. I didn't know if there was anything you wanted to add about that effort that's going on right now, and from your perspective, how that would change.
I don't know a lot about that effort besides that it's being considered in Congress right now in our state legislatures. Yeah, it's based on the Washington model where mothers who would otherwise be incarcerated are allowed to stay in their homes and in their communities and get parenting support and still maintain, you know, still maintain a controlled lifestyle, as it were, under the rubric and under the watchful eye of community corrections. But it would help break that cycle of parents going to prison. Children of parents who are incarcerated are insanely more likely to end up incarcerated themselves. And how can we break that cycle? Well, this is one of the ways. Mm-hmm. If parents can role model to their children how to make changes in their own lives, how can that be anything else but good for mm-hmm. for that community? So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful it'll continue to move forward.
Yeah, and in Washington, they did it partially from a financial state of standpoint, that it saves actually them a lot of money with the social services and incarcerating. Mm-hmm. So call your legislators,
yes,
and let them know that you also support that. And we had a question about what the birthing process is like for women. What happens to custody? Is that of the children to women who have the children of the women who have birth in prison?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the details of how that works out. I know every case is different. If a person is going to be released within a certain amount of time after the child is born, then they won't lose custody as long as they have somebody who can take the child after birth. So it's usually their parents or an aunt or an uncle who will step in, or sisters will often step in and take that child for the woman until the woman can get out. If the woman is going to be in for a significant amount of time, I mean, it all depends on the circumstances. If the child's going to be given up for adoption, or if the child's going to go with a family member.
Yeah. And I guess part of the question was about shackling and shackling, whether it happens and how.
Oregon, we do not shackle the women while they are giving birth. So while they're actively giving birth, they are not shackled. There's always an officer present. But they are not shackled. They are shackled before and after, but not during the experience. And that's a change. I mean, it used to be that women were chained to the bed even while they were giving birth. So, so there's a little progress.
Yeah. And Annie asked what free world people can do to support folks inside.
Oh man, that's a good question. The biggest concern that women have who are in prison is about their families on the outs. In some ways, I feel like if communities could support the families while they're on the outs, how much relief would that provide for the woman in prison, you know, to know that their family is being looked after and taken care of and mentored. And I don't know, you know, free world people need to be in conversation. I mean, we in America, we incarcerate, it's like 1 out of 110 people. I mean, so certainly we all know somebody who's been incarcerated or is currently incarcerated. And if we don't, then we know somebody who knows somebody who's been, I mean, the numbers are too big for us to continue to be so naive about who ends up in prison. So I think just staying in touch with people, staying in touch with your community, being in touch with legislators, being an advocate for change in the system, being in touch with watchdog groups who can help ensure that treatment of inmates remains humane and rehabilitation is held up as one of the tenets of corrections. You know, these days in particular, oftentimes rehabilitation is low on the priority list these days. So I'm seeing that change on a nationwide scale. I'm seeing rehabilitation become more important again. But we need community members need to be involved with the powers that be to help shape how we're going to deal with people who break relationships in our communities.
Thanks so much, Emily. That's actually all we have time for. So I thank you for being on the show. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Reverend Dr. Emily Breaux, the chaplain at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. And thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul.